Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, the Senate's Committee on the Economy. It is 1:35. Today is Tuesday, March 27th, 2018. I'm Senator Mia Costello. Welcome, Senator Gardner.
Thank you.
Welcome, Senator Machicki.
Thank you.
And welcome, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'd like to thank our recording secretary and LIO operator, Carrie, and also Max. Appreciate it. Today we have one bill on the agenda. It is a bill that we've heard. This will be the third hearing on the bill, Senate Bill 119, introduced by Senator Hughes, and welcome, Senator Hughes. It is health care costs and disclosures. We do have a committee substitute, and we did leave public testimony open. We do have a few individuals who are online to testify, and we have individuals in the room to answer questions. But first, we will go ahead and move the committee substitute. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move committee that the committee adopt work order 30LS0503/R as a working document.
Okay, and I'll object just for the sake of discussion. And my aide, Natasha McClanahan, will walk the committee through the changes, and then following that, Senator Hughes will be available with her aide, Buddy Witt. So welcome, Natasha.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. Natasha McClanahan, for the record, here to explain the changes from version U to R for CS Senate Bill 119. The bill title was revised to include provisions pertaining to pharmacies' disclosure of cost information. It also adds that pharmacies must disclose pharmacy retail price and consumers' cost-sharing price when filling a prescription. It adds a new section to AS 0880 directing that pharmacists in the state must, unless directed otherwise by the consumer, charge the lesser of the two prices between the pharmacy retail price and the consumer cost-sharing price. It stipulates that pharmacies must retain prescription and customer cost information for a period of at least 2 years. It adds a new subsection requiring disclosure to the public that a provider who chose to pay the maximum penalty in lieu of disclosing their prices was in violation of this section. And sections 8 and 9 of version U are removed, and a new section is added requiring the Department of Administration to conduct an analysis of the possible impacts to the state of Alaska and to employees under managed plans should the department adopt the requirements of AS 1823-400, AS 1823-405, and AS 2196-200-300.
Thank you, Natasha. And I'll continue to hold my objection to the bill until we've heard from the sponsor and her aide, Buddy Witt. Welcome, Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Shelley Hughes, Senate District F, and with me is Mr. Buddy Witt. And if it's your desire, Mr. Witt can go through the sectional if you'd like, or you let us know what you...
That would be great if Buddy could go through the sectional.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Buddy Witt, staff to Senator Hughes. I'll highlight the changes that were made to the bill, if it pleases the Chair. To back up a little bit, when the bill sponsor and staff were working on drafting this piece of legislation, one major component of the bill that was left off, because quite frankly we weren't quite sure how to include it, was the pharmacy industry, pharmacists in particular. It was brought to our attention through a collaborative effort through several different offices, that there was a piece of legislation currently that was introduced by Senator Wilkowski that addressed that issue. And after carefully examining that piece of legislation with the help of the chair's office, it was the will of the chair and the will to incorporate that. So I'd like to go over those really quickly, if I may. And it starts right off at the beginning of the bill. And Section 2 adds that a pharmacist must disclose retail and cost-sharing information when requested by the consumer. And Section 3 is added, and that amends AS 0880297 by adding new subsections regarding disclosure of prescription drug pricing to customers. So it says a pharmacist shall charge the lower of the two prices of a prescription drug between the retail price and the customer's cost-sharing price or the customer's in-network price, unless otherwise directed by the consumer. The pharmacist must inform the consumer if the retail price is lower than the consumer's cost-sharing price. Pharmacies must post and notice that the consumer may, at the point of sale, request the pharmacist's retail price of a prescription. It states that no contract or agreement may prohibit a pharmacy from complying with this section. And then, of course, in subsection F, this definitions used in this section. Other changes, and AS...
Madam Chair?
Senator Stevens?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just some clarification here, Mr. Wendt. So looking at that, the top on page 2, it says the pharmacy retail price and the consumer's cost sharing. Shouldn't that be price as well? Shouldn't that be price after cost sharing? Because when I look at your explanation of changes, it always talks about consumer cost sharing price. And that's just that's a question. And what I'm really trying to get at is, are there only two prices that that pharmacists deal with? Is there only the pharmacist's, only the consumer cost sharing price, and then I guess the retail price? Are those the only two prices? Are there other prices out there that are established because of various deals with insurance companies? I don't know. Only two prices that we're dealing with ever in pharmacies?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, for the purposes of this portion and what we're attempting to do, there would be only my understanding, and as well as I can be educated on the subject, is that there are only two prices that we're dealing with. One is the price that the pharmacy would charge on a retail basis. The other price would be what an insured person would pay in copay for that same prescription. So that is what we're talking about when we say the cost sharing. That is the copay. It may not be the full price of what you're paying in copay, but that's the differential between the two terms.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So only those two prices are dealing with. And could you look into that issue on the top of page 2 if it should say price after consumer cost sharing?
Senator Stevens,
we'll take a brief at ease for a moment.
Okay.
And Senator Stevens, the definition of cost sharing is lower on the page, line 17, page 2, and I'm not sure if that would alleviate your question or answer your question about the lack of the word price on line 1. And then we also have been joined by Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Stevens, did you want further clarification on that question?
I was just asking, Madam Chair, that if it needed to be clarified, it should. But if it doesn't, and you're fine with that, that's fine.
So we put it on the record, so we could probably look into that question also later. Senator Gardner?
Thank you. Madam Chair, to the previous question, it seems to me that the price is something that's set by the retailer, and the cost sharing is not set by the retailer. It has to do with the insurance agreements. So technically, the pharmacist can't set the cost sharing, so it's not really a price. That's the way I think about it. But I did have a question also, and that is what the impact is on the pharmacist of this. The impact of this provision. In discussion of another bill, we heard how oftentimes pharmacists are not reimbursed through the insurance process for the actual price that they paid for a product that they then sell. Does this provision of the pharmacist being required to sell it at the lower of the two competing possibilities, does that hurt their bottom line?
Senator Gardner, through the chair, that's a great question. And Madam Chair, if it pleases the committee, Senator Wilkowski's staff, who has really been working this issue and this this bill, might be a good resource to bring up once we've completed this, who can speak more to that, if it's okay.
Thank you.
Senator Garner, any further questions?
We'll wait.
Okay. Thank you. Buddy, if you want to continue.
Thank you, ma'am. Brings us to Section 4 of the bill, starting page 3 in line 5. AS0880305 is added, instructing pharmacists to maintain pricing and sales information for no less than 2 years. Section 5 and Section 6 are added to the bill, and these two sections in conjunction amend AS0880460 to exempt violators of this particular section only from the maximum penalty of a Class B misdemeanor, and includes them in the civil penalties assessed for the violation of this section. So if I may clarify on that, Madam Chair, there are some pretty severe consequences to pharmacies who violate certain provisions in Chapter 80, AS0880. We didn't want simply not providing a piece of paper that says you may request our retail price to be a violation that could be to result in the charge of a Class B misdemeanor. So we added some language to clarify that simply this section and this section alone would not result in the maximum penalty of a Class B misdemeanor.
Senator Hughes?
I just want to point out, because if you're following along the sectional, it doesn't state this, but in lieu of paying the penalty, the pharmacist would have the option of, within 1 year, paying the difference in the, if they charge the higher one when they should have charged the lower cost, that they could refund that to the patient in lieu of paying the penalty. I believe that's correct. Is that correct, Mr. Witt?
Yes, Senator Hughes, thank you. Okay. Are there any questions about that first section, Madam Chair?
No.
Then I'll skip forward, because the vast majority of the bill hasn't changed quite. After that, most of the tenets of the bill are the same. I will move to Section 8, though, and subsection G. This should be on page...
Page five.
Thank you. Subsection B. We have added language based upon questions that were asked in committee the last time that we met, that allows the department to disclose to the public that the healthcare provider or facility is in violation of this section should they choose to pay the maximum penalty in lieu of providing the requested information. And Madam Chair, this is in the section that requires healthcare providers. To list annually the top 25 healthcare services used from each of the 6 CPT codes. So, in other words, if a provider or a facility is in violation and chooses just to pay the maximum penalty in lieu of providing that information, then the Department of Health and Social Services does have the ability to list the fact that they are in violation and they chose to pay the penalty in lieu of providing that list.
Buddy, is the penalty $2,500?
Madam Chair, that is correct. It's $50 a day, not to exceed $2,500.
Thank you.
As I mentioned, the rest of the bill is unchanged until we reach Section 13 of the bill. That is page 13, lines 6 through 16. The bill sponsor and I met with representatives of the Department of Administration to go over some of their concerns regarding the piece of legislation before you. The Department of Administration was concerned about implementing such major policy changes without having a good amount of time to review and vet it and do an analysis of the impacts. They were worried about implementing something that might have an unexpected drawback or even worse, a perverse result, and being put into quite the corner and having a bind on there, but they had with something that they had to do by statute. So the bill sponsor agreed with this language. And in this section, basically, the Department of Administration shall perform an analysis of the possible impacts to the state of Alaska and to the employees under managed plans should the department adopt the requirements of AS 1823-400, 1823-405, and 2196-200 through 300. So did you want to speak to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Shelley Hughes again. In that regard, in our meeting with the Department of Administration, they were incredibly interested in the concept and eager to learn more about what the other states that have gone this direction, how well it would work. And we're eager to see if it might bring savings indeed. And as an example, I think just for the retiree health care per year, it's about $650 million for retiree health care. So even if a small percentage could be saved, it could be pretty significant. But the request for the analysis, so we don't have consequences that are going the wrong direction, they also actually were willing, if they found it to be of benefit to the state and to employees, to go ahead and implement it. That language wasn't in here, and that's just something perhaps a future committee might want to consider it, because if they do indeed find that it is would be beneficial, you know, they should be able to go ahead and start working toward in that direction, and they were in agreement to that when we met. But I'm glad to see that the that we are requesting a report back from them to see whether or not it would be beneficial. So I think it's a step in the right direction, Madam Chair.
Thank you. For the record, Buddy Witt, Staff to Senator Shelley Hughes. After that section, Madam Chair, the bill is unchanged.
Thank you, Buddy, and thank you, Senator Hughes. Are there further questions for the bill sponsor, Senator Stevens?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so I understand this, the record of prescriptions, we're requiring the pharmacist to keep those records for 2 years. Is that a price that changes a lot or little? So I guess what I'm getting at is how onerous is this going to be on the pharmacist to keep those prices on record for 2 years? I think about the apples at Safeway. They change every day. Does that happen in the pharmacies? I don't know.
Senator Stevens, through the chair, that's a great question. And my apologies, actually, for not really explaining this section in quite enough detail. And as the bill sponsor had mentioned, and I'll turn to Section 3 of the bill on page 2, and in this section, we ask that, if a consumer goes into a pharmacy and they purchase a prescription, then after the fact they find out that the price they paid was the higher of the two prices and the pharmacy was in violation. We are asking the pharmacy to keep this information on hand so they can go back, check their records, and be able to give the refund of the difference between the two prices so that they can keep from being in violation and have those maximum penalties. We want to give some leeway to them. As far as the price goes, the price that we're talking about is the price at the point of sale. So if we're going back and looking within the last 2 years of record and trying to find where this consumer interacted with the pharmacy, we're taking the prices that were on hand at that snapshot in time. As far as the prices that are negotiated, my understanding from speaking to a couple of pharmacists is that depending on the contract that they or the agreement that they have with the insurance company, it could be a one-year agreement, it could be a multiple-year agreement. It just depends on the contract, the customer, et cetera. So my understanding is those the retail prices may vary. The retail prices may vary for whatever reason, but the contracted rates that they have with the insurance companies are set for a specific period of time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you're not hearing from the pharmacists that this would be any difficulty for them to maintain 2 years' records?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, we have not heard that yet. I have, at least this office has not heard it. But Senator Wilkowski's might have, and maybe they can provide some insight.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know how many of us have worked in retail. I have some in my life, and I don't know the cost that the business paid. I mean, you don't always know that. You scan it, and it rings up whatever's in the computer, and you sell it. And I think it might be fairly complicated for a pharmacist to, number one, see what it cost the pharmacy, the product, check their current retail price, and then figure out, depending on the buyer's insurance policy, whether they're retirees or active or any of that, what the cost to the consumer is. I mean, that's a lot of steps for ringing out every order, and many people who come in have multiple prescriptions. So I'm just sort of curious. I'd like to hear from pharmacists about what this would entail for them.
Senator Gardner, through the chair, I can understand that. I would just my understanding is, of course, we're talking about retail, not wholesale. We're talking about the retail price, and each pharmacy will have a price set for if someone had a prescription and wanted to come in and pay cash for that prescription, their retail price, what they would give to that person. That is the price that we're dealing with, and again, my understanding, and perhaps someone correct me if I'm wrong, and is that information, as well as the consumer's cost sharing price, are something that's kept on file and accessible very easily by pharmacies. If I'm mistaken in that, we'll let someone else to correct me.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Hughes.
This is Shelley Hughes, Senate District F again. I appreciate that question because we know this is changing things up a little bit, and to some degree it may require a little bit more on whether it's a provider, pharmacist, insurer. But we're trying to make it as not onerous, and I do think when that retail price, that is set every day of the year. They can go look up what something's going to cost every day of the year. Every day of the year, if a policyholder comes in and they're, you know, when they punch you into their system, they're finding out that cost sharing. Most, I think, there could be a few pharmacies that are small that don't have this kind of software, but I think for the most part, so it's very quickly available because they're always going to know the retail price every day of the year, and if a policyholder comes in, they're going to know the price for the particular drug every day of the year. So it's a lot of information. It is complicated, but they do have it readily available.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I apologize for being late. I had a bill up in another committee. So if I'm asking a question that's already been asked, please accept my apologies in advance. So my question, though, is that does this only pertain to providers that are providing service here in the state of Alaska?
Senator Meyer, through the chair, yes, that's correct. These are for pharmacies that are operating in the state of Alaska. Is that the portion of the bill you're referring to?
I'm referring more to the physicians.
Senator Meyer, through the chair, bear with me one second. We flip to that section if you don't mind.
Well, and I guess my question would be then, these telehealth companies that are outside of the state of Alaska that provide services in Alaska, would they be impacted by this?
Thank you. I will, Senator Meyer, through the chair, again for the record, Buddy Witt, staff to Senator Hughes. We will get absolute clarification on that, but our understanding is that any healthcare provider licensed to practice in the state of Alaska would be privy to the policy.
Okay.
Senator Meyer?
Yeah, I think that would be good to know, Madam Chair. And then another question, and again, it's been a while since we've heard this bill, but if you have a primary care with like 12 different physicians, which is very common, as you know, in Anchorage, would each physician then have to post their charges on the wall somewhere? And would that get kind of messy in the doctor's office?
Senator Meyer, through the chair, if I'm understanding your question correctly, if there is a hospital with a number of physicians working within the hospital, would each doctor in the hospital have to post their own charges? Is that am I understanding your question correctly?
No, I don't think so, Madam Chair. Some of these, I'm thinking of like primary care in Anchorage where they have numerous doctors in one facility. So my question would be, does each physician in this medical facility, would they have to each post their prices that they charge?
Senator Meyer, I'd have to check through the chair. That's a great question that I'm not prepared to answer. I'd have to get that answer for you.
Okay, I appreciate that. And then, Madam Chair, if I can follow up. You know, a lot of times physicians will have a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant, and you'll see them versus you'll actually seeing the doctor. And more than likely, they're going to have a different rate for each one of those codes if you see a physician assistant versus if you actually see the physician. How does that come into play? If you do the physician assistants also have to post their prices, or nurse practitioner if they're working with the physician?
We'll take a brief at ease. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. We are going over Senate Bill 119, the committee substitute. Buddy, you are going to respond to a question from Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Meyer, through the chair, once again, Buddy Witt, staff to Senator Shelley Hughes. The only thing I can do is tell you what the bill says, and my assumption would be that when we talk about healthcare provider or healthcare facility, that we're talking about all healthcare providers and all healthcare facilities. So in Section 8 on page 4, starting on line 11, says a healthcare provider in the state and a healthcare facility in the state shall annually compile a list by procedure code. It's pretty broad language, sir, and so I assume that any healthcare provider and any healthcare facility must provide that information. On the next page, this would be page 5, starting with line 4. If a healthcare provider or healthcare facility in the state perform fewer than 25 healthcare services, et cetera, under those CPT codes, then they have to provide the list that of services that they do. So that's pretty broad language. I would say it's broad on purpose in order to make sure that we're capturing as much information from healthcare providers and healthcare facilities that we can to be as much value to Alaska healthcare consumers as it can be.
Senator Hughes.
And I believe that if we applied it to your question, Senator Meyer, through the chair, a primary care clinic with 12 providers, and they had one set price for each thing that applied to all 12 physicians, to any PAs or nurse practitioners that worked in that clinic, and the facility, that it could all be one list, a list for the facility and all the providers. Thank you.
And if I can follow up on that, Madam Chair?
Senator Meyer.
And so did I see somewhere in the bill, too, then, that they also put it on their website, or is that on the department's website, all these different prices?
Senator Meyer, through the chair, the list that is being discussed in that section, and again, we're looking at – apologize. Again, we are looking at Section 4 of the bill – or, pardon me, I'm all discombobulated here. Section 8 of the bill on page 4. The list that we are talking about here is a list that is turned into two things, a list that is turned into the Department of Health and Social Services for posting on their website. It is also to be put in a conspicuous public reception area in their office or facility, and if they have an internet website, to post on the website.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. So the onus is on the department to put it on the website, not the doctor's offices.
Senator Meyer, through the chair. No, the information is sent to the Department of Health and Social Services, and the provider or facility must also post it conspicuously inside of wherever they practice, and if they have a website, to post it on their personal website.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Senator Machicki.
Just directing committee members, Section 8, page 7, has a definition of healthcare facility and healthcare provider to sort of better clarify the definitions.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Are there any further questions for the sponsor of the bill? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I will go ahead and remove my objection to adopting the CS for Senate Bill 119 version Romeo. Is there any other objection to adopting this as the working draft before the committee? Okay, so seeing none, it's adopted as the working draft. Next, I'd like to invite Elise Soren Burke up from Senator Wilikowski's office.
Good afternoon, Chair Costello and members of the committee. For the record, Elise Soren Burke, intern for Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you very much for being available. Are there any questions that you heard asked that you wanted to respond to related to the new sections of the bill?
To Senator Gardner through the chair, you were concerned about what the impact on pharmacists would be as far as their profit. Generally speaking, this would be a benefit to pharmacists. Currently, in many contracts that pharmacists have entered into with pharmacy benefit managers, they're required to pay back the difference in the cost-sharing amount. So oftentimes, we approach this from a consumer protection standpoint, but oftentimes this would help the pharmacist as well. There could be cases where the pharmacy retail price was greater than the cost-sharing price, and the pharmacy could miss out on some profit, but generally that's not the case.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. So have you discussed these provisions with pharmacists, and what's your takeaway, if so?
The general takeaway, we do have one letter, which is from a pharmacy organization, and the general takeaway is that they support the idea of the bill. They are a little bit hesitant about all of the onus being put on the pharmacist. So I think they would prefer that more of the onus be put on the pharmacy benefit managers, excuse me, through the chair.
Senator Gardner.
Do we have any pharmacists here, Madam Chair?
I do not have any pharmacists who have signed up, but they could be in the room without having signed up. And on here in the room, we have Sarah Chambers, who's with the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I would really like to hear from somebody who can tell us, you know, I don't really completely understand the relationship between the pharmacy and the pharmacy benefits manager, and how this could apply to the suggestion that we go through the PBM okay. Instead of putting the onus on the pharmacist.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Gardner. Are there further questions?
Okay. I just have one more comment through the chair. What this piece of legislation would do that is a real positive is the section about, I don't have it in front of me, but the section regarding contracts, is there a copy of it over here?
Yeah, we'll take a brief eddy, sorry. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. And Elise, you were going to respond to a question, or actually provide a comment on the bill.
Yes, thank you, Chair Costello. Again, through the chair, Elise Soren Burke, intern for Senator Bill Wilikowski. In section 3 of the bill, that's line 14 on page 2, no contract or agreement may prohibit a pharmacy or pharmacist from complying with the provisions in this section. So this would be really beneficial to pharmacists, just in that currently they often have something called a gag order in contracts, and if they did not have that gag order, then they would be able to communicate with the consumer more openly and honestly about prescription pricing.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there further questions? Thank you very much for being available to the committee today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to invite up Sarah Chambers with the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. and Anna Latham with the Division of Insurance. Thank you very much, and you've made yourself available for questions, and so I wanted to open up that opportunity for the committee members to ask questions. Anna's the Deputy Director of the Division of Insurance, and as you know, Sarah is the Division Manager for Corporations, Businesses, and Professional Licensing. As they drum up their questions, was there anything that you heard in the discussion so far that you wanted to respond to, and does the administration have a position on the legislation?
Madam Chairman, for the record, Sarah Chambers, Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. The Board of Pharmacy has taken a look at SB 209, Senator Wielichowski's initial offering, and discussed it, but declined to offer a position on the bill. The general thought, and I'm paraphrasing here, the general thought from the board was that it's not dramatically different than what they already have. There are some changes, of course, but nothing that would cause them to register enthusiastic support or concern about it. We are reaching out to the board chair since the bill has changed a little bit. We're making sure that the chair is aware of these changes, but we're unable to get in contact with him prior to the hearing today. So we are going to be following up and just making sure that the board is fully expressing any concerns that they might have.
Thank you. And related to this section of the bill, which asks it would be the Department of Health and Social Services. I mean, this bill right now has a zero fiscal note. I mean, do you foresee that changing at all as it moves onto the Finance Committee?
Madam Chair, again, this is Sarah Chambers, and we, the Department of Commerce, Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing, has not yet offered a fiscal note, and I don't anticipate a dramatic fiscal note, but we have to perform that analysis and haven't done so on this particular bill at this time.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Okay. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate you being available. Next, I will move into the continued public testimony on the bill and invite Joel Allenbaugh with the Foundation for Government Accountability. Thank you, Joel, for your patience. I know you were listening online in a previous hearing and were unable to provide testimony, so feel free to provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that very much. Through the chair, for the record, this is Joel Allenbaugh. I'm with the Foundation for Government Accountability. I'm joining you from Maine today. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm a visiting fellow with the Foundation for Government Accountability, or FGA. FGA is a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank. We focus on health and welfare reforms at the state and federal level. I also own and operate an employee benefit insurance agency in the state of Maine. I like to say that though I work in health policy part of my time, most of my time is spent sort of street level, if you will, living with the policy and regulatory choices that we make. At FGA, we've been interested in this concept of aligning patient incentives with meaningful transparency as a simple and direct way to lower healthcare spending and certainly support your efforts with Senate Bill 119. We certainly recognize that Alaska's healthcare market has unique characteristics, and we often find state-specific dynamics state-to-state, but one thread that seems to cross all borders is widely varied cost of services with no apparent tie to quality. One transparency vendor, Healthcare Blue Book, looked at healthcare cost data in Alaska recently and just within Anchorage found a cost difference from high to low within different facilities in a carrier's network that were really dramatic. We saw something in the range of $15,000 discrepancy for a knee arthroscopy, about $2,000 for a shoulder MRI, approximately $3,000 for colonoscopy, and I believe that was some of the data that was shared in previous testimony. another transparency vendor called My Medical Shopper, which is out of New Hampshire, analyzed healthcare cost data a number of years ago and found some interesting information. It's pretty consistent as we've looked around the country. And they found that there was a 1 to 2 times cost variation in every conceivable healthcare service. There were no real exceptions. The cost variation was more like 10 to 20 times for the more commonly utilized services, and the maximum cost variation existed in an average radius of just about 10 miles. Their analysis, I believe, was done in 2015, determined that if New Hampshire residents had been aware and able to shop just the top 100 most commonly performed services and go to a cost-effective provider in their immediate geography, they could have cut their healthcare spending by over 70%. We certainly don't think shopping alone will solve the many complex challenges with healthcare, but there's low-hanging fruit that can be saving Alaska residents money today. And I would just encourage you to imagine the value to a patient if they were able to save over $15,000 just by choosing a lower-cost in-network provider in the same city. Lastly, I think it's important to think also about the impact a law like this can have on the delivery system itself as providers respond to incentives, just as patients do. One result in the state of New Hampshire implementing a program for state employees in 2010 where they provide very similar cost information and incentives to state employees to seek lower cost in-network options. And one of the stories that came out of that experience from the vendor that operates it was that one of the areas that was becoming a real high cost area for their health plan was specialty medications often provided through infusions. And they added infusions to their shoppable list of services. At the time that they did, there were no non-hospital-based infusion centers in their state. And just a few years later, there were over a dozen clinic-based infusion centers at a fraction of the cost. One patient alone, which is a story highlighted in the NBC Nightly News story just maybe a year or two ago, shared that this particular patient had been going to this treatment. It was $40,000 per treatment, was able to relocate to a clinic setting that was in the range of about $4,000 per treatment, and it was saving the state on that one patient alone, one treatment alone, over a quarter of $1 million a year. That's sort of an extreme example, but I think it gets to the point that there's a lot of opportunity for consumers to lower healthcare spending just by having information that, in our opinion, quite frankly, should be readily available to them today. And this is really the opportunity that I think Senate Bill 119 represents, and would encourage your support in making this bill law. And thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm certainly happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Joel. Are there questions from committee members? Okay, looks like there aren't any. Thank you very much. Next, Richard Holt calling in from Eagle River.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Richard Holt. I'm the chair of the Board of Pharmacy and also a licensed pharmacist here in Alaska. So I just want to give a couple of different perspectives. You know, the board has not reviewed the committee substitute, and so I really want to give my personal perspective as a licensed pharmacist in some of the concerns or onus that's placed on pharmacy and pharmacists in general in this committee substitute. The first big impact would be providing consumers with their cost-sharing data. We think of pharmacy billing as being simple from a consumer perspective, but consumers don't realize that with thousands of contracts out there, I won't know your copay amount as a pharmacist until I have your prescription, interpret the prescription of what it says, and enter it into the computer system, ensuring that the drug is correct, the dose, the directions, the date, supply, how long is it supposed to last the patient, because that's really what determines off of contract how much the patient's going to pay. So until I physically send that through to the insurance company via the computer, I'm not going to have any idea of what your copay is or if it's covered at all. That's going to depend on the contract. So it's not uncommon for patients to call a pharmacy and say, well, how much is this going to be? And in if pharmacists aren't out there trying to weasel their way through money and getting more money from their patients, we will tell them how much it's going to be for a cash prescription. But unfortunately, if you don't bring me the prescription so that I can interpret it and enter it under the legal standards of submitting a claim and not submitting it falsely to get accurate insurance data, I cannot provide you a copay or a cost-sharing price. It's not possible. I would have to have the patient interpret the prescription to me over the telephone, understanding Latin directions as they're written by providers, and then try to get me their insurance information over the phone so that we could get it submitted, and the accuracy of that is probably not going to be very good. The second thing associated with that is the question that Senator Stevens, I believe, have on how many prices are there out there. And there's a retail price, cash price, and then there is, as defined in this bill, a consumer cost sharing. And so it according to the definition, represents a plethora of different dollars that comes from a healthcare plan, which is further defined A through F. But there is another one that I can immediately think of off the top of my head, and those are discount cards. And discount cards are searchable on the internet. Anybody can go online and type in search discount cards pharmacy, and a million of them come up. And not all pharmacies take them. Again, they're based on contracts. But you can print out a discount card from the internet, and depending on that contract, with that pharmacy, if they accept it, it's going to have a completely different price. So it doesn't look like discount cards are part of this process, but many, many, many patients use discount cards, especially those who don't have an insurance. And so I don't think you can lose focus of that as well. Section 3. Senator Gardner had some great points on the onus of pharmacists and the steps that this takes. I'll tell you, as a pharmacist, if you're filling 300 and 400 prescriptions a day, to have to manually go back on every claim that is coming through, on top of analyzing the prescription, is it the correct drug, is it the correct dose, are there any drug interactions, any allergies, anything clinically that I have to think of to not harm this patient, and now have to go back, say, oh, yeah, by the way, is this coming out less than whichever price is left? Are we charging them the right amount? And if it's being submitted to a third-party plan, then they should automatically be sending back the cheapest amount and not having to make a pharmacist manually have to go back. I don't know if any way in a computer system it just accepts the price that comes back from the insurer. I don't go back and then manually check, oh, let me see, that it came back a $5 copay. Is that less than my retail price? But the manual process, and I don't know, I'm not a computer programmer, on whether it's possible to change the software or not, but it's not something that's real user-friendly to have to do on top of everything else of giving immunizations. Doctors are calling in. Patients need counseling. Checking all of the prescriptions, it's definitely an onus that's being put onto the pharmacist.
If you could wrap up your public comment, please.
Thank you. Posting notices, patients don't really pay any attention to notices, to posters. And then the last comment I'd like to make is, so this is for in-state pharmacies. Why is there an added onus on in-state pharmacies versus out-of-state pharmacies who the Board of Pharmacy does register? So an out-of-state pharmacy who's filling a prescription for somebody in Alaska and doesn't have to comply with this bill, but a pharmacy in the state would. And with that, I thank you, and I'm available for any questions.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Holt. Would you reflect on Section 4 that requires pharmacists to maintain a record of costs for a period of 2 years? Is that going to be a difficult thing for pharmacists to do?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, most of our records are electronic anyway. I don't really see that being a big onus. The only additional work that may have to be done with some pharmacies, I don't know that all pharmacy computer software tracks both of those prices at a point in time and store them, so they may have to change their software to do that, but I don't know the software of all of the pharmacies. Otherwise, prescription records are kept electronically anyway.
Thank you, Mr. Holt. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to take a brief at ease. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Is there anyone else online who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 119? Is there anyone else in the room that wishes to testify? Okay, seeing none, public testimony is closed on Senate Bill 119. And I've invited the sponsor and her aide, Buddy Witt, Senator Shelley Hughes, back to the table to make any final comments or clarification based on the testimony that we heard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Buddy Witt, staff to Senator Shelley Hughes. And I believe I can speak on behalf of the bill sponsor when I say we appreciate Mr. Holt with such short notice coming in and giving his view of the bill. I just want to point out a few things to the committee. And I will say that the bill sponsor and staff, while developing the policy, did meet with every stakeholder in this policy that we could think of to get input on how to make the bill better, issues that that were raised were addressed, and having not been through that process with the Board of Pharmacy, will respect Mr. Holt's view on the bill. I believe I can say that. I would point to Section 3. The bill is not attempting to change the way a pharmacist fills a prescription. In Section 3 and Subsection D, you can see we're asking for this transaction, this communication to happen at the point of sale. The assumption by the bill is that everything that we're seeing that the pharmacist must do must happen after the prescription is filled. This is simply an informational piece for the pharmacist to let the consumer know if one of the two prices is lower, so that the consumer can make a purchasing decision. That is all the bill is attempting to do. We are very respectful of the very difficult job the pharmacists have, a tremendous amount of responsibility. We don't want to hinder that job. We're simply asking for a little bit of transparency and information for the consumer when they purchase, when they fill a prescription. The other item I would point to is there is no mandate for pharmacists to give information over the phone in this bill. Pharmacists are not demanded to answer phone call and be able to give information on a prescription should someone call out of the blue. It's not excluded from the bill. It's not put in the bill. The bill does not speak to that sort of communication. The pharmacist, of course, he or she would need to do whatever is pertinent for them to do their job and do it correctly and also meet the guidelines of the policy. And with that, Madam Chair.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. But Section B says the pharmacist shall, unless directed otherwise by the consumer, charge a consumer the applicable cost sharing or the current pharmacy retail price, whichever is less. So that means every prescription, every pharmacist, they have to figure out which is less in order to comply with that, and that means they have to go through the submission to the insurance company and, you know, that calculation and then check their other. And I'm just – that's a lot of work.
Senator Hughes.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Gardner, and we appreciate that, and we are happy to work with the Mr. Holt and others who might want to weigh in on this. I know my experience, just because I've had to be at the pharmacy quite a bit for what I went through last year, is once they bring up my name, that information is available to them instantaneously, And my understanding, talking to folks who develop software, adding in the piece where the retail price would pop up when that particular prescription, that number of pills or whatever it might be, is put in, that that information could become readily available. And I do understand Mr. Holt did not have this in advance to study, but it is specifically at the point of sale, the request. So, again, as Mr. Witt mentioned, somebody calling ahead generally, just wondering which is going to be cheaper on the phone and not having all the dosage and all that information, this does not make any requirement of the pharmacy for that. It's at the point of sale, and my understanding is the software would can accommodate that if it's adjusted. So, and again, we'd be happy to work with those pharmacists interested and concerned about that, and if we can allow consumers to have the information they need and ensure people aren't being overcharged, and also make it the least amount of work for the pharmacists, we are there and we want to do that.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you, and Madam Chair, and to the bill sponsor, I appreciate that, and I think it's a laudable goal, and I want to support it. But I just want people to understand that even if you have had the same prescription filled every 3 months for your entire life, they have to check with the insurance company every time, because maybe you're not employed anymore, or maybe you're getting it a little bit early. And I've had this happen to me, a medication I take, say, well, they're not going to cover it until 3 weeks from now. And then I can call the insurance company and say, I'm going to be out of the country for 6 months. I have to take this with me or whatever. And they'll do that. But, you know, they have to check every time. They can't assume that we're good for it. So it is another step that's fairly laborious. And I don't have any sense of whether we're talking about a $20 difference or a 15-cent difference. But they have to do it every time. So that's a concern, and they're not here to speak to it.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little tiny bit worried about Section 3E. Just wonder if there's an interstate commerce issue on kind of contractual precedence. If there's a supply contract or agreement with an out-of-state national firm, can the state just waive the requirements of that contract? That seems interesting.
Senator Machicki, through the chair, and my, for the record, Buddy Witt, staff to Senator Hughes. I that is an excellent question, sir, and I did a little bit of research thanks to the office of Senator Wilikowski. I can tell you that legislation almost exactly like this, but very similar to this, has been enacted in Connecticut, Georgia, North Dakota, and Louisiana, and it's currently in committee in Massachusetts. As it relates to the Federal Commerce Clause, this would again be a policy that the state would enact for pharmacists who operate or who are licensed to operate in the state of Alaska. And we have an entire chapter, 08880, that tells the Board of Pharmacy how they must do. But this one little provision, yes, does bring up those concerns. All I can tell you is that those concerns have been addressed in other states. Apparently there were no drawbacks from that, and to the best of my knowledge, there has been no pushback from Ledge Legal when drafting this piece of legislation, pushing back or letting us know of concerns for that particular section.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you. I mean, I'm not convinced. A lot of states do, especially when we have pieces of legislation that come from some of these national groups are often not tested, but it's just an interesting question. I actually don't know how the state can legislate an out-of-state supplier contract. I think it's a fair question. It will remain in my mind, and I do, again, you see some of these bills that go from state to state, and then there'll be a challenge, and sometimes the rest of them realize they have the same problem. To me, it seems problematic, but just wanted to get that on the record. I think it's an important consideration.
Thank you, Senator Machicki, and your concerns are on the record, and so are Senator Gardner's. The bill next travels to the Senate Finance Committee, and two of the members on this committee sit on that committee. So I feel confident that as it moves, that those concerns can be brought up in subsequent committee if the chair so chooses to hear it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
And I will be requesting that we hear from affected parties as it moves into finance as well, so we can get some of the questions answered that we may have here today as well.
Thank you. Senator Gardner?
Nothing.
Senator Meyer?
Nothing. Oh, yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 119/R from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection to moving Senate Bill 119 version Romeo? Okay, seeing none, the bill moves. Thank you, Senator Hughes, for working with us. And our next meeting will be Thursday at 1:30. We will continue to hear the title for rewrite. We're working on a committee substitute with the sponsor and bills previously heard. So with that, the committee is adjourned.